I do take life seriously, but I just think that a bit of comedy, a bit of laughter is always good for the soul. I try and have that in any conversation I have with anyone.
Welcome to a new episode of Most Memorable Journeys. My guest today is Panikos Panayotou. That's a very Cypriot name for a man who doesn't live here, but he was born here. No, he wasn't born here. We'll find it all out when we talk about it. I met him at this amazing conference recently, organized by Paul Lambis. Shout out, Paul. Thank you for connecting us. Panikos is a film director, a writer, and a producer, but he is so much else. I mean, when I was studying for this, when I was doing a little research for this interview, I found out lots of other things, and we are going to get closer. Welcome to Most Memorable Journeys, Panikos Panayotou.
Thank you very much for having me, and I'm looking forward to having this conversation.
So, Panikos, were you born in Cyprus or not?
I was born in Birmingham, but my heart was definitely born in Cyprus. So Birmingham's the second city of the UK, those that don't know it, because it does really get lost in translation. But yes, I was born in the UK, but have lived in Cyprus and have lived in the UK equally.
Your parents left after the invasion, is that correct?
Actually, no. My parents left just before the invasion. So they came to the UK for a working holiday. Father first, mother followed. And the idea was to pay off their debts. So my father was a blacksmith. And unfortunately, didn't drive. And then in Trachonas, where they lived, which is now in the occupied area of Nicosia, he tied a metal table to his bike to go and fix something for someone. And unfortunately, which, as you can imagine, a metal table on a bike, he cut off his Achilles tendon. So he fell, he crashed, cut off his Achilles tendon, had an operation. They sewed his Achilles tendon to the bone. Then he nearly lost his leg. And then he had an emergency operation, which he had to pay for. And then he went to England to work to pay off his debts. So my mother followed thereafter. They paid off their debt. They paid off their mortgage. They paid off their house. And then in the week of 74, they opened the news. And then obviously they found that the Turks had invaded the island and they lost their house. And then out of rage, he had bought brand new furniture for his house. He burnt the container.
How amazing. You mean the furniture that he had bought in the UK and that he was going to bring to Cyprus?
Yes. Yes.
So yeah. Never came back to live here, or did they ever come back to live here after that?
There was attempts to come back and forth. So my father... is from a small village in the free area called Bodamyul, which is next to Omodos, you would know because you live in Limassol. And he built a taverna in his garden. But unfortunately, he passed away before he was able to build it. And he built it in the neighbor's garden.
Why did he build the taverna? Did he just want to have a taverna?
No, he built the taverna because he loved his village that much. He wanted to put his village on the map. So when we say we're from Bodamyul, no one knows where it is, you know? So, and they say, where's Bodamyul? Oh, Bodamya in Nicosia. Oh, Bodamidisa next to Argos. No, they don't know where it is because it's got 24 residents, you know, in Bodamyul. It used to be 500, obviously, back in the day. And he wanted to put it back on the map and he wanted to start sort of agro-tourism. He had big dreams. You know, and unfortunately, you know, he wasn't able to make them dreams reality. But we'll hear later on, but I have tried to do that for him.
So that is one thing that I want to talk about, like one of the things that I wrote down, LGK in the community. That is connected to that taverna idea, isn't it?
It is.
Tell me about that. What is that?
So my father had a tradition of building tavernas in his garden. So in the UK, he did exactly the same. He mimicked what he did in Cyprus and started this taverna, which was a completely illegal build. And UK is not like Cyprus, you know. You can't just start building things. You know, like in Cyprus, you're building a village and no one will know that you've built there. No one will ever come to check it. In the UK, they'll check on Google Maps. They'll know there's an illegal build and they'll come and take it down if they have to. So he built it. Then he told them he had all sorts of excuses. He had dogs in there. He had this in there. So he was making excuses of what it was. And unfortunately, before he finished it, he passed away from cancer in 2012, which was a big hit for us and anyone else who's lost a loved one, obviously. So I'm not just saying that we're on our own.
Yeah, yeah.
But he died very young. He died at the age of 65. And he had a lot of dreams. He wanted to share his passion for food and heritage with people, you know, and that's where LGK came from. So it happened by accident, actually. So there were some families that had come from Cyprus to Birmingham specific, and they had this rare condition called amyloidosis, which is a liver condition that paralyzes you from the toes upwards. And there's certain places on the island, I think Bachna's one of them, Bolemithia's one of them, Gerinia's another, there's a place in Bafos, where they have this gene. And it's because of the Crusaders, when they passed through Cyprus, the Portuguese left this gene and that unfortunately creates this condition. And when two people have the gene and marry and create children, it's very highly likely that they'll have the disease, a bit like thalassemia. So they came over to Birmingham because Birmingham's got a specialist unit for transplants because it's the military hospital here. And then a cousin, an uncle of mine, had introduced me to one of the families and said, please help them. We got very, very friendly. And then I met about five or six of the families, and most of the families had tradesmen in. So one was a builder, one was an electrician, one was a carpenter. So one day in this community little meeting that I set up with them just to see how we could help them, I came up with this brainwave and I said to them, guys, I've got an unfinished restaurant in my garden. You're a builder, you're a carpenter, you're an electrician, you're this, you're that. I don't have money to give you, but why don't we finish off this restaurant, open it, and whatever it makes, you can have for your living expenses, because they were in the UK waiting for a liver transplant for 2-3 years. So the Ministry of Health would have paid for their operation, but not for their living expenses. And don't forget, they would have left their jobs or lost their jobs. They would have had children that were just spouting for themselves in Cyprus. And that's exactly what happened, which is crazy. I opened this restaurant in my garden, and from day one, I was ram jam packed. From day one.
Amazing.
Yeah. And then obviously LGK is Lagis. Lagis was my father. But LGK means Lagis Greek Kitchen. So that's where it all started from our Greek kitchen, from our taverna. And then the journey just continued there on, which we can talk about.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, because you didn't only feed those people who came to the UK for transplants. You started feeding other people, people in need.
Yeah, so basically, as a day job, I am the head of sports and community for the council in Birmingham. So I've got a lot of experience around funding, around helping communities, around this, around that. So I also have a lot of experience of setting up charities and NGOs in the UK. So people come to me to help them go through that process. So once I'd opened a restaurant, I thought to myself, why don't I just make this a charity, you know, and expand it? Why don't I just carry on living my father's dream? And, you know, to be honest with you, it was the way I dealt with bereavement. It was my bereaving process, changing a negative into a positive. So yes, you've lost someone you're very close to, but why not live their dream again? Why not make their life last, mm-hmm. you know? And then I made a mascot of my father. And then that's when I wrote my first book. I wrote a book called Amathus to Birmingham. So it was the journey of Greek Cypriots to the city. And I managed to get some money. I was the first Cypriot that could get money from the lottery, because over here, the lottery is the biggest funder in the UK. And they give money to the Black community, the Asian community, to all these other newly arrived communities. So I put this application in, ironically, to write this book. So my idea was I wanted to interview couples and get their migration journey to the city, and for them to give me a recipe that's had to evolve because they couldn't find the ingredients in the UK. So their own twist to their own Cypriot recipes. So it was a food journey as well as a migration journey. And that's where the idea of setting up a heritage food and heritage charity came from. So when I went to the lottery to bid, I got knocked back. Are you still there? You're frozen?
Yeah, now you have to start again. Okay, we are cutting here. And you start again with when you asked for recipes.
Yeah. So basically, we started off this book. We asked for recipes and a migration journey. So it became like a food journey book. And the recipes were adaptations of what ingredients they used instead of the ingredients they would find in Cyprus. For example, you could not find gologasi in the UK, right? Gologasi comes from Cyprus. It doesn't come from the UK.
True.
So when I went this idea to the lottery, they knocked me back. So they said, no, we don't feel like it's a good project. So I phoned them and says to them, if I was black or Asian, I would have had the money by now, right? But because I'm a minority within the minorities, right? We're not even on your map. I got the money for the book within 2 days of that call. I also got exclusive rights to the museum in the city center to launch the book. And I got any help that I wanted just because I sort of pushed the right buttons.
Sometimes you need to be a little bold.
Sometimes you do.
Yes.
Indeed.
Yes.
And that's where my journey started in production, because when I was interviewing men and women, the men weren't letting the women talk, you know, and I felt like there was a story untouched, you know. And then that combined with the fact that I interviewed my own mother in my first book. And it was like, I can't even explain. It was a whirlwind of information that I've lived with this woman all my life. And I just feel humbled and embarrassed that I didn't know half of her journey.
That is amazing. But I want to stop here and I want to go back to something that you talked about, about you using your father's death to live his dream. And I think when somebody goes, and obviously when somebody dies, we mourn. That's normal. We are sad, we mourn. But I strongly believe that we should not mourn too long, because the person who it has left us does not want that. The person who has left us wants us to be happy and wants us to do something great. And that's what you did. You sort of realized your father's dream, and instead of, you know, feeling sorry for yourself, you did something with it. I think that's fantastic.
You know, I'm going to use an analogy I that helped me during that period. I mean, we're not going into a podcast around bereavement, but maybe we're touching upon that subject. But when I was going through that process of losing my own father, you know, my best friend, I read this book around death, and there was a story of this young girl that had passed away. I mean, child, like 5-6 years old. And I was reading the analogy of the parents wanted to make another child, thinking that that child would come back into the new child.
Replace, exactly.
So that's how they were dealing with bereavement. And then I read in the book that the father had seen a dream of this young girl, and he'd seen her in this beautiful place, you know, beautiful heavenly place where there was thrones of all these children, and these children were all dancing on the thrones, and they had big candles either side of the thrones. But the throne that she was on, she was sitting still and had no candles and no light. And he went over to her and says to her, "Is it you? Why do you not have light on your candles?" And she said, "Because you keep on putting them out with your tears."
You see, that's exactly what I mean. You see, and this is such a beautiful story, such a beautiful story. And yes, of course it's sad when someone goes, but no, I feel we should always be grateful for what we had instead of, sad for what, and that's why it's also so important to live. It's important to live every day as kind of if it was our last.
100%. And people say that. And like with my father, I don't own him, you know, so he's gone to a better place, but I can just now celebrate his story with what I do. And that's what I decided to do. And it's become a living now. It's become a career. And it's opened so many doors. And I think the doors have opened because of how passionate I am. And people buy people, you know. So I could put on paper my idea and it might sound bland, but when I'm delivering the idea with all the energy I have, it's a completely different story.
Amazing, amazing. Now, that is one thing that I had written down. And then the other thing that I want to talk to you about is the Queens of Migration and the Queens of Amathus. Those are, it's not just the Queens of Amathus are stories about Cypriot women who went to the UK, but the Queens of Migration are not only Cypriots, I think, if I got that right.
Yeah, that's right. So basically, after my first book that I told you about, Amathus to Birmingham, I then went back to my funders and said, you know, I need to do an independent story on women. Because they were already scared of my retaliation, if they said no, they says yes. And I did my first production, which happens to be one of my best productions, actually, and it was my first. I hadn't done production before, hadn't done film before, hadn't done documentary making, but I'm a big believer that even if there was a strip in Ayanaba and there was no hotel in the middle of it, and someone was to say to me, right, I want you to build a hotel, my hotel would be the best hotel on that strip. And I would not have the experience of all the other hoteliers. And that's what I think. If you've got two legs and two arms and a mind, you can do anything, you know, as long as you think that you can. So I started this journey. I did Queens of Amathus. And then when I finished that production, I felt quite biased. You know, I'm a very proud Greek Cypriot, you know. In the UK, we're seen as foreigners, even though we've lived here most of our lives. You know, the UK will say to us, for example, when it comes to Christmas, people that you work with, they'll say to you, are you going back home this year? You know, so they don't see you as being part of the ecology of the UK. They always see you as a foreigner. So when I finished that, I thought to myself, you know what? There's some universality of my stories. There's some commonality, because when I released my film in the UK, I came second in international film festival. And when I screened it, there was a couple of really big names there. Trevor Beatty was one of them. He produces films over here. He's the guy who owns the French Connection brand, FCUK, if you've heard of. It's a fashion brand. So basically a lot of people seen it. And then we had like a Q&A at the end of the production, end of the screening. And a lot of people that were there, 90% were non-Cypriot. And they said, look, we can relate to what you've said. You know, my parents are from Jamaica, or my parents are from the Caribbean, or my parents are from Africa, my parents are from Asia. And then the Commonwealth Games were coming up. And I thought, you know, what a good idea to do a joint effort of migration in the city. So the Queens of Migration that you've seen on our site, that's part of a docu-series, which one of the episodes is called Queens of the Commonwealth. And I interviewed 22 women that migrated to the city in celebration of the 2022 Commonwealth Games. And luckily, I managed to get a broadcast deal with ITV on that one. And then the journey continued with my research, and I did a lot of research around migration in crisis, you know, refugees from Iraq, refugees that were living in Turkey, refugees that would walk from Iraq to the UK, literally walk, you know, to try and get a better life. And I've started a lot of development work around extending my episodes, so that arena as well. And one, because I enjoy it, but two, bringing it back to the Cyprus mold that I'm trying to create in films that have got universality, commonality, and a bit of a world platform, it makes my Cyprus films easier to sell, right? And easier to add on and bolt on to these mainstream channels. So that's really the journey that I've been on in terms of production and where I am. And there's lots more up here, unfortunately. I don't go to sleep.
This is something that fascinates me a lot, because I used to be the director of the Global Woman Club Cyprus. They have a lot to do with, you know, empowering women, and the fact that you actually interviewed all these women, because at the end of the day, it's the women who drive, you know, who are in charge of the house. It's the women who drive, who are the driving force in the family. Men go to work, and these women come from far, far away, but they know that they have to just go on. They have to They have to feed their people. They have to keep things going. And I think it's admirable. And I am sure that you have heard a lot of fascinating stories from these women. And one thing that always sort of makes me sad is people judging refugees. I don't believe anybody leaves his home for fun.
That's a really good point. No one leaves their home for fun.
You know, nobody leaves because they have a happy home and they have a beautiful house. They leave because they are probably bombed or because they are scared. So, you know, I think this what you are doing can also create a lot of goodwill with refugees.
You know, on that note, what you just said, so I'm doing some work at the moment. So I've got like an extended project in the UK called Queens of the City. So basically, it's like a legacy project to my films where I go into a city, any city, and I celebrate migration, but I also celebrate the heritage of that city. And we work in schools and we teach about migration to them schools. And I'm working in a city at the moment, which the south of the city is very white British. And the north of the city is very migrant, but the south of the city are very, very racist. Mm-hmm. You know? And when I brought them together in a dialogue, back on the note that you've just, one of the sort of South white British counterparts has said, we didn't want you here to the migrants. And the migrants turned around and said, we didn't want to come.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So don't just assume that we left our house and wanted to stamp our ground in where you call your own land, ours, but we don't have that privilege, you know? And that's something I think is very powerful. And something that once they've spoken to each other, realize actually we've got a lot of synergy and maybe we should respect them more than we do.
Yes. And I think also appreciate each other's, you know, respect the differences, but also appreciate and include the similarities, because deep down we're all the same. We are all the same people. We want to be safe.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, and then back onto the woman thing that you spoke about before, and, you know, it's great to hear that you were a lead person on sort of that mission for women on the island. Last time I checked, I wasn't a woman, right? But the story of a woman for me is the most powerful, is the most relatable, you know, and it doesn't matter who you are, even as a strong businessman, if you're watching a woman in front of you on screen that is telling you about sacrifice, you would relate, respect, and feel that story. I'm not saying that the male version won't do the same, but there is a different ingredient in females, especially in production for me, that gives that screen quality that I just can't get from anywhere else.
Yeah, I think it's also that the wholesomeness, you know, it's caring about everything and making sure that everybody is fine. Do you ever come across women who do not want to speak to you?
Those are the best. Those are the best. They've got the best stories. But I have a way where they call it in Cypriot dialect, souvlizoumen, you know? So I probe and probe and probe. And there's one actually at the moment that I'm trying my best to interview. So her story is very dramatic. Her husband died in 1974. They killed her husband. And they also killed her father in 1955. The English did, from torturing her father. And she was witness to that. So basically they tortured him in front of the child. But she's just got an amazing spirit. She's got loads of energy, but she doesn't want to go behind camera. So I'm trying my best to get there. A lot of the women that I interview, 90% of the women are that humble. They're not sure why I would ask them to be interviewed, you know? And then on the other hand, the women that I interview, they haven't been given the opportunity for someone to sit and pay so much attention to their journey. So I become a bit of a therapist, actually. It's like a therapy session. So I'm babbling, but in my first film, just an analogy for that, we did our premiere in Birmingham and we had like all these abysimos, VIPs, and they were like in a line. So what we did at the end of the film, we had like a violinist, Cypriot violinist and lute player and we would play, and we would give an award to each queen that was there, and flowers and bouquet. Okay. And then what was happening is I was at the end of the line, and all these VIPs were at the front of the line. So you go past all the VIPs and you see me last. Every single woman diverted and came to see me first, you know, because they'd shared that story.
Yes. Connectedness.
And there's one particular story in my film, Queens of Amathus, that basically a woman, her mother, she was known as Eleni Oradissa. She was basically the woman that helped everyone, like you said before, sacrifice, helped everyone, open arms. And it was like Second World War era where there was rations and so forth. And she was known as the Mother Teresa of Birmingham, okay, because of how she helped. And basically, without giving you a spoiler, she planned her death. I don't know if someone had told on that day on the engagement of her granddaughter. She did a list of things that were in her house. She gave keys to the neighbor. And then on the actual engagement, she went around and thanked everyone for everything that they've done in her life, and kissed them and asked for forgiveness if she's ever upset them. She danced with her granddaughter, but she passed away with a smile, and she passed away with happiness. Now, the reason I'm telling you that story, they had that on video VHS, old VHS. Mm-hmm. So when I interviewed this woman, she told me this story, and I said, oh my gosh, that's an amazing story. You know, she told me how her mom planned her death, you know, and she was happy that she was leaving and blah, blah, blah. We talk about death again. And she says to me, before I left, she took out the VHS, and she says to me, if you think you could put this in your film and somehow it will inspire people to live a full life, take it. And I put it in my film, and it was a shocker, honestly a shocker. And the other thing is, her, the daughter, or any of the family, have never watched that VHS. They've not had the heart to watch mm-hmm. it. And the first time they watched it, this is like, well, I don't know, 15, 20 years after this incident, my film's been done, maybe longer. The first time they watched it is a premiere of this film. And then when they watched it, it was like everyone was in tears, right?
I can imagine.
This woman got up, walked over to me, got on her knees, and tried to kiss my feet.
Oh my God.
And I picked her up, got on my knees, and kissed her feet. And I said to her, I'm in awe of you, not you of me. You know, this is your story.
That is fascinating, very fascinating. But again, all this is because sometimes we forget to live, and we allow rubbish, silly, stupid things to take away the joy instead of enjoying life and understanding how well we are, how what a good life we have. And the thing about stories, my phrase that I always use is we should tell our stories, because your story could be somebody else's survival guide. Somebody could recognize themselves in this story and say, if she or he survived this or went through this, I can do it too.
100%, you know, and then, you know, I'm always a big believer. You always have a choice of how to react, always. Mm-hmm. You know, you can react negatively or you can react positively, mm-hmm. you know. Someone can cut you up in the street, you know, and start shouting at you. You know, you can choose to shout back, or you can choose to be humble and let that person carry on. You know, you could be working with someone that's really difficult. You can choose that as a challenge to make them a better person and make you a better person, or you can choose to hate that person and tell everyone how spiteful that person is. Now, I'm the latter. I'm the first one, and I'm trying my best. You have to change a negative into a positive.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just get drained down.
Yeah, because you just waste your energy on things that you can't change.
Exactly. You know, and then hopefully that characteristic of mine comes out in my films, you know, because I always want that positive twist on things. And I mean, I've just produced a recent film called Queens of Cyprus. I interviewed global pan-Cypriots, but with a name, so A-listers.
Yeah.
I interviewed John Christodoulou, who was at the Diaspora Conference. I interviewed Linda Papadopoulos, the psychologist. I interviewed this really interesting Armenian Cypriot woman that works for Netflix. She's an art director. And I interviewed two Turkish Cypriot women that were part of the dialogue for the Kofi Annan plan. But anyway, look, my point is, and I interviewed the women as part of the Women Walk Home campaign that was in Cyprus, which I'm sure you know about.
Yeah.
My point is, I took the negative energy of the Cyprus problem through the voice of women to show how you could create positivity for a solution. And that wasn't me. I mean, I can be creative and edit and bring, you know, this word ends here, that word starts there. But this was a female perspective, and even the men that were in it. So I interviewed Professor Kypros Nikolaidis, that's done a lot on Netflix. Yes. Even the men that were in it, they showed the respect that they had for their Cypriot elders, the Cypriot women in their lives, and how they lived amongst everyone in unity, you know, and they were capable of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like it showed a positive slant of, you know, if there was more of that female voice, would things be different? Would things be more positive? Would we be more positive as men? You know, would the island be more positive? Is there some messages from that film that have got commonality for others that are struggling with the same things? You know, of course there is. So I released that film in New York. We did a premiere in New York a few months ago, and I'm planning a tour in Cyprus in July. And there's a couple of other tours, hopefully in Australia, Athens, and London and Birmingham as well. And I'm hoping, I'm praying actually, that people get the message that I tried to give. Because as a filmmaker, you've always got this message that you're really trying to portray with your audience, but you won't know it if they get it until they watch it.
Yeah, that is true. And I was just looking at the time. You know, this has gone much deeper than I thought. This has been a very philosophical conversation, Vanikos, because we we are therapists after all, aren't we? Tell me, you are a passionate Cypriot, even though you don't live here. Just to end this and on a little lighter note, if somebody is listening, people are listening to my podcast in 124 countries. We've been talking about Cyprus. We both know Cyprus very well. We both speak the language. But if you want to tell somebody what is Cyprus, what how would you describe Cyprus in a few phrases?
Wow, a few phrases only. Let me think. Cyprus to someone that doesn't even know where it is on the map.
Because lots of people don't know. I do a lot of speaking in the US, and I always start my speaking with, my name is Elizabeth and I live on the island of Cyprus in the Eastern Mediterranean. Cyprus with US at the end and not E-double-S.
Oh, like the band, Cyprus.
Yes.
I think I would say that Cyprus is an island in a country which Ayanaba sits in. And some of you don't understand that Ayanaba is not a country. It's a part of Cyprus. So that would be strike one, because that happens in the UK. Right?
I know.
Right. I'll also say that Cyprus creates a lot of creative people and a lot of ambassadors and professionals. Not everyone has a fish and chip shop like everyone thinks in the UK. Everyone from Cyprus has got a fish and chip shop, right? And then I guess that my quick analysis of Cyprus would be, it's an island with a rich past. It's an island with many cultures. It's an island with sun, sea, and sand. But the best of the island is in the food, for me.
That is true. That is true. My daughter has a little company called Cypriotness. And they promote Cyprus food in Switzerland and Germany mostly, because you are so right. There's nothing more beautiful than a table full of Cypriot food and beautiful colors and flavors. Vanikos Panayiotou, we're getting to the end. And I hope that when you come in July to show your film, you will let me know.
100%.
Any last words? Are we Have we become too philosophical? Did we go too deep, or did you get to say what?
I didn't know what direction you were going, because usually I don't attempt to. By the way, I come across comical, but that's just my character, I really don't attempt to be like a stand comedian. But I do take life seriously. But I just think that a bit of comedy, a bit of laughter is always good for the soul. I try and have that in any conversation I have with anyone. I do have a massive passion for Cyprus. You know, I represented Cyprus as an athlete. We did get to talk about that, but maybe another time.
That's another episode.
I came and did my army over there, which was crazy. Don't know if it was a good idea or not. But in general, I just think that from the diaspora, we've got an opportunity to put Cyprus on the map creatively. And hopefully, with lovely people like yourself that give me this opportunity to have a voice, and others, you know, and with the support of others, we make that reality.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being on Most Memorable Journeys, Panikos Panayotou.
If you enjoy my podcast, please like, share, and subscribe to my channel. You will find all the information in the show notes.